Welcome to whatever number this is in the series, probably number four, I think. I think he's number four. It's strange times we live in. I speak to clients every day, and they're coming up with different challenges to be resolved. A question I was asked only yesterday, speaking to one of my clients, is how do we retain clients that we've got already? And how would he find new clients if this continues beyond a reasonable date? And that's a good question. What I've found speaking to clients and in the wider business community is that potentially mentoring isn't seen as that essential business expense that people need to maintain and retain. And that's a concern because for me, you sit alongside me that mentoring is one of those essential services that we provide to business. And so if mentoring isn't seen as a non-essential expense in business, and businesses at the moment are trying to strip back their cost structure as much as possible, what can we do as the ABM and as mentors to impress upon our clients that actually you still need mentoring? I'd like to kick that off with that question. Would anybody like to come in? Gary, have you got?
I think the challenge is it's uncertain times, isn't it? It's uncertain times for the clients, and yes, I agree that mentoring is not seen as a necessary spend by some. So I think the only thing we can do is just make sure that our business model is aligned to what the client's after. You know, I know I've cut a lot of my sessions in half and they're doing it in smaller manageable chunks now to get benefit from it. Right? It's all about listening. It's all about responding to their needs. What are their key challenges? And just making sure that you're adding value over and above what it's costing them in terms of money and time. You know, keep asking the right questions and just keep listening to the answers. And there's always evidence there.
Yeah, may I add to that, Simon?
Certainly, Helen. Yeah, please do.
I think it's largely about how we talk about mentoring and how we explain it to the bigger, wider world. Because I find that lots of people just look on mentoring as kind of, I don't know, like a luxury item or a nice to have that perhaps doesn't tick the budget box. And I think it's about explaining more to people about what mentoring really does for people and how actually it should be part of our almost our healthy everyday lives. I mean, I myself have had a mentor for so long that she's retired now. And I take her for lunch, you know, periodically. And because we've built such a strong bond. And so I totally get and understand the huge value that it's given me. And it's a little bit like saying to people, you know, the subconscious is a funny, funny thing in our minds. It can do what it wants. People don't recognize until they really need it sometimes the value of having a mentor. And so I think it's perhaps about, you know, as we try to do all the time, raising the profile and the value of what mentoring can really offer to a person's life that sort of perhaps may help with the budget box, if you like.
Yeah, good point, Helen. How do you think that, this is for anybody, how do we think we can make that value more tangible to our business clients, so that they see the true value in anybody?
Engagement with them on you know, differing levels, and a sort of a subtle promotion of it almost. I'm not sure I'm speaking totally off the top of my head, but I just find that lots of people still muddle up mentoring and coaching, still don't get the difference, and still don't understand the real sort of end of the road game with mentoring, really, and how it's not just something you do for a phase of time. It's a difficult one, but I do think it's raising the awareness, I suppose, is where I'm trying to go, Simon.
One of the things, if I may, that we've talked about in various forums in the ABM, whether it be kind of regional, online, exec, is this kind of concept of asking the client at the beginning of a session, what's going to deliver most value to you today? and then asking at the end of a session, did that deliver value? What could we have done to have delivered more value? And often as coaches, mentors, consultants, we're afraid to ask that question because we don't want to hear a negative response. But I think in today's climate, what's going to deliver most value for you today? And what's, you know, how was that session? And, you know, I'm getting a lot of clients. I've onboarded a couple of clients in the last couple of weeks, which has been great. And they say to me, like, what structure are we following? What format are we following? And I say, the format is we start with a blank piece of paper and we'll tackle your most urgent, necessary issue each time. And that's going to deliver most value to you. So I think that for me is going to get us focused on becoming more of a no-brainer if we're delivering maximum value in each session.
And is that tangible value something that we can translate into a message to businesses generally, so that we can promote the value of mentoring generally?
It sounds like to me there's two slightly different discussions here, but both have a very similar answer. So it is all about, as you said at the beginning, Simon, it's about asking, or Gary, apologies if I've attributed that question to the wrong person, but it's about asking the clients what do they need, what are their biggest challenges, because it is going to sort of, you know, vary. And I've noticed that. I was talking to a client yesterday and he was refreshingly upbeat about this whole working from home bit, because he absolutely hates his boss, so he just does not want to go back to working in the office. And it was, you know, very much odds to other people who are talking to who are really struggling. And I guess it's also the question, sort of, you know, coming back to Helen's point a bit, really, is that how do we actually sort of demonstrate the value of mentoring before we even onboard them? I think that's the key message that we also need to get out there, to sort of find out what are the challenges and the problems that people are facing, and then sort of position mentoring in a way that actually can help support and address those. And then, as Gary says, you know, we're starting with a blank piece of paper, because it is going to vary so much from person to person and organisation to organisation. You know, we don't need to be prescriptive in terms of a solution. It's, you know, what is the problem in the first place before we try and sort of, you know, tell them what they need.
Anna, if I can add to what Anna's just said, I think that's all. All these comments are really useful. And for me, I've got two immediate responses to all of that, which is that it seems that, first of all, we have to demystify for people that don't know what mentoring is and what value it brings, kind of demystify the process. I mean, what Gary's just explained is so simple, and it's so accessible and so achievable, and it's not daunting or intimidating. But I think a lot of people hear mentoring and think, that's not for me. That's for people that maybe are in different positions, more senior roles, or have more stressful positions, or, you know, they put up barriers to actually starting the process because they don't understand that it can be as straightforward as starting with that blank piece of paper. So demystifying it, that messages around that, I think, will be really useful. And the other aspect for me is always case studies. So sharing successes, and, you know, if we can identify clients who are willing and able to ideally do it with their names, you know, how it's helped them, that makes it feel really real and really worthwhile to people. You know, even if clients don't want to share their names, I'm creating case studies that are kind of slightly more theoretical and, you know, anonymized in a way, can still be really helpful. It's all just about making it seem like it's a step that anybody can get involved with.
Simon, and this actually, Siobhan's just stolen my thunder.
I didn't mean to.
Great minds think alike.
She's just so wonderful. I don't know. I mean, I'll take the 20 quid later, Siobhan. But on a serious note, all of us, when we've got clients and we've worked with clients for a while, our clients think that mentoring is absolutely the bee's knees and the best thing since sliced bread. Once you're working with a client and you're mentoring a client, clients absolutely love it. And I think this whole thing about our clients being evangelical on our behalf is the key. It's the clients that haven't been there, haven't done it, haven't experienced it, haven't seen the benefits of it, that don't really understand it, back to Siobhan's point. And we just got to be finding ways where our clients will just stand up and tell us how wonderful it is. And I cast my mind back to one of the ABM conferences, it's probably about 4 or 5 years ago, and some guy, and I can't even remember who it was, and stood up and he just said, I would not be here today if I hadn't had a mentor. My business would not exist if I hadn't had a mentor. And we all know that. We all know that. But it's those that don't have mentors and haven't used mentors that somehow need to get that message. And how we do it, I don't know. But I do think the case studies principle that Siobhan's talking about is the way forward.
That's an interesting point. Thanks, Graham. So what if we've captured, if that's the right word, the attention of a business owner, and we're having that initial conversation before they've engaged us as their mentor, what do you think is the, I mean, we all have, may have a different answer to this, but what do you think is the one key thing that gets that business owner from being a person who's just talking to us to a client that really engages with us? How do we get them over that line?
I've got two comments on that, if I may. And particularly the client that I've landed this week. Firstly, I talk a lot about a money-back guarantee. If I select the right client and I go through a process that validates whether they're good to work with as much as they want to work with me, so onboarding people for the right reasons and knowing that you can deliver value rather than for financial gain gives me the ability to be able to be confident to offer a money-back guarantee. As long as they take action, as long as they do the homework, so that money-back guarantee makes it a no-brainer. But the other thing with this individual, he's actually a pre-start. And, he said, look, I want an honest conversation with you. I want to work with you. I like what you're offering. But at this moment in time, given that he's actually employed at the moment and is on furlough, so he says, look, I'm on reduced salary. I've just put a deposit down on a house, so my funds are tight. I said, well, fine, let me tailor something to suit your budget. So we had an honest discussion about what his monthly budget was that wouldn't stretch him, that wouldn't put him in a compromising position. And I've tailored something to meet his budget as a temporary process until he's back up to speed with his finances. So the money back guarantee and then tailoring something that suits the client rather than suits the mentor would be my two tips on that.
Would anybody else like to come in?
I think, thank you. I'm picking up from that point, Gary. Another approach I've used with small clients with limited budget is to allow them to spread the payment into the future months. Obviously, I'm taking quite a risk by doing that, but equally, they're getting used to paying an amount of money per month. So I actually work out a day rate appropriate to that client, costs up, say, the first 3 months, and then spread that over the first year. And then work out what the payments would be that's affordable by them, which hopefully, and I take the view, picking up Gary's point, if I haven't managed to demonstrate the value in 3 or 4 months, I probably don't deserve to be paid.
And just on that, I don't know if anybody's seen the announcement from Go Cardless in the last week. Is everybody familiar with Go Cardless? It's a direct debit mandate software. So you raise the invoice, and on the date it's due, it sucks the money out of the client's bank account and lands in yours 2 or 3 days later. The latest software update gives you the ability to offer staged payments for clients. So let's say you were sending somebody $3,000 invoice and you were going to charge them $1,000 a month. What Go Cardless now does is gives you the ability to raise an invoice for $3,000 and say, I want to collect £1,000 a month on the 22nd of each month. So it automates the process. You're not having to raise manual invoices, and it automatically sucks the money out.
Thanks, Gary. That's interesting. Has anybody else got any comments regarding what tips people from being just a prospective client to an actual client?
Following up on David's point, I very often will just agree to do a very small piece of work for a client.
A taster event,
a small piece of work, or even just do it for a month or a couple of months and see how they like it, and then that will almost inevitably lead on to them wanting to use you going on into the future. So you're not making them commit to a significant sums or a significant commitment in time, right at the beginning, but do it in small bites. And I think I've probably done that with most of my clients, actually, getting them on board, is just say, well, let's just do a day or a couple of days, see how it goes. You could almost also, I haven't tried it myself, is use Gary's idea, which is, and if you don't like it, you can give your money back. I don't mind that. I think that I'm perfectly happy with that, because the reality is if it hasn't worked and, you know, they don't like me and I don't like them, then I don't mind giving them the money back, because we're not going to work on a long-term basis anyway.
Yeah, I stole that initiative from Gary probably 2 or 3 years ago, and I use it quite openly now to offer my clients their money back if it doesn't work out, with some obvious T's and C's attached to it.
Oh, my USP's gone now then.
Yeah, sorry. You gave that one away for free, or complimentary even, Peter.
I did do it actually recently with a colleague, and we went to a meeting with a client, and we said, well, we'll have this meeting. It's a half day meeting, and if you don't get what you want at the back end of it, then you don't have to pay the bill. And of course they paid the bill the next day. They thought it was wonderful.
Really good. Very good indeed. So how did we get new clients? What Gary's picked up on the point that he's actually gained a couple of clients over the last few weeks, and I'm glad to say that I have also, mainly by recommendation, through existing clients that I've been working with and say, do you really need to speak to this guy because ... Going into the future with social distancing potentially being with us for another 12 months, that potentially means that networking is dead. Is virtual enough, or are we going to still need to be out there canvassing and looking for clients and talking to our existing clients to gain new ones? Has anybody got any comment about the future of networking and the future of where we get our clients from?
Based on my experience, Simon, I'm part of 3 different networking groups in Milton Keynes, and I would say that post lockdown, attendance is higher and value is lower.
Interesting.
A lot more people. I don't know whether it's they've got more time or they're searching for different answers, or whether it's just more accessible for them. But I would say that networking meetings that meet every 2 weeks, probably with 20 to 24 people, are now getting 30 to 40 people online. But equally, I think because there's not the chance to stand and talk to them over coffee and so on, I think everybody is, for me, it feels like there's a race to reduce the value of what they do, and to give more things away, and they're trying to look at new ways of packaging. So I would say overall for me, the networking events I go to are higher volume, lower value.
That's a really interesting point, David. Thank you for that. Do you think, is it possible to network virtually? As you said, there's nothing like having a face-to-face conversation over a cup of coffee or a glass of wine or whatever it is, and getting to know that person. But on an individual basis, you know, is networking going to work in the future if social distances carries on?
I think it's back down. I think I'm back going full circle. It's trying to get our proposition clear in that environment as to say exactly what we do. And I think then it's about spotting, you know, coming back to one of Helen's points from earlier, I guess a lot of people in that room are feeling exactly the same exposure that we're feeling, which is, will their clients still value what they do in 6 months' time? And they're probably having the exact same set of thinking, how do I reposition myself to my clients so that post-lockdown they still want to work with me? And of course, as we all know, mentoring, training is one of the very few discretionary spends they have. So not surprising that we're under pressure on it. So I think it's about, in those virtual networking groups now, looking for the people who probably in a successful business situation, but struggling to really understand what their clients might want from them in 6 months' time. And will it be the same as what they're providing 6 months ago?
I think there's going to be an adaptation, isn't there? Sort of go back to your question, Simon, about virtual networking. I think if this lockdown does go on for, you know, sort of, you know, 6 to 8 months, which they're sort of, you know, mentioning, then we kind of, you know, we're going to have to get used to it. And I'm seeing a huge number of webinars. I'm very reluctant to be as part of like the race to the bottom and giving away everything for free. And I think there is a bit of Zoom fatigue at the moment and webinar fatigue. I mean, I'm sorry, you know, Jane, if I'm just talking for myself, obviously this webinar excluded from that. and actually I do genuinely mean that, you know, I'm sort of getting sort of slightly tired of, you know, the same old sort of, you know, webinars and stuff like that. But I think it's just a learning and adaptation phase that we're going through. And then there'd be this, when they're settling down and identify new ways of working and, you know, making sure that there's, you know, there's still the quality and the consistency that we can offer. You know, as David said, it isn't just about the volumes, it's about, you know, what are we really about?
I agree with that entirely, Anna. If I may jump in, Simon, it's a bit of like the old quality versus quantity thing for me. I think everybody's taking networking things virtually at the moment, and some are now, or it's settling. I think it's starting to settle. As we're all adapted now, but there are many groups that really can't possibly add value, because when you get 40 plus people on a call like this, from a networking perspective, it's difficult to get something from it. I think collaboration is huge, and sharing. I'm massive about values, I am, and my core value is the sharing of experience. What I'm doing is niching and collaborating with people who are, you know, I trust, and who are, whether they're near to me geographically or in the area of work and expertise, it doesn't matter. But I think if you do that, it's a little bit like the two heads are better than one scenario, and you recommend and bounce off each other. And I have found that, you know, I think networking will settle. But I have found that it's really about adding that extra bit of value, running the extra mile, really demonstrating huge sort of adaptability, flexibility in what we're doing. I really like the second point that Gary made about, we'll taper something to fit people's budgets, or adapt a meeting for a networking experience that works for everybody. And I just think everybody's got to be really, really thinking outside of the box at the moment, whether it's creating a networking virtual meeting to add value and share experience, contacts, and genuinely network together, or whether it's the everyday work that we're actually doing. It's just about, we need really extra thought and adaptability in there.
If I can add to that, if I may, look, I think I find majority of networking quite tiresome, to be fair. It's the same people in the same shiny suits and dog-eared business cards trying to sell the same crap. I think this is all about adaptability in your business model. For me, if I can give an example, there's a lady called Helen Pritchard that anybody that's into LinkedIn might know of. Helen, she put an email out this morning. She developed a product this week. You know, we've all got knowledge and experience, haven't we? And she put a post out to say that she developed like a top tips document, for want of a better phrase, that had some to do in. There was no coaching with it, no support with it, no human interaction, but she was knocking it out at 27 quid, which is nothing. And she'd sold £2,000 worth in the last 2-3 days. So what knowledge and information do we have that we can impart to either our traditional, our existing, or a new audience that can generate us some income? And I think, as Helen says there, joint ventures and partnerships are very key. You know, I've got a client at the moment that's looking to put a training and development program, almost an internal MBA, into their business. I've put a partner into that under my, well, actually under her brand, but I'll get a kickback for that as a JV. You know, that could earn me 750 quid a month. So, you know, what knowledge and experience and partnerships have you got that you can offer to your new or existing audience to generate a higher volume of smaller value offerings that cumulatively still keeps the till rolling?
I like that, Gary. I think the whole sort of, you know, the passive income, the sort of sharing information but not giving it away, or at least having the balance, you know, giving some away,
yeah,
but then sort of, you know, not devaluing our word, knowledge, IP, etc.
I launched a course a few months ago. Well, I've developed a course over the last few months and not really launched it. Sorry, but I've launched it in the last month, and it's 99 quid for a 2-hour course. You know, I put a post out a couple of days ago, yesterday morning, email, somebody's bought your course. Well, all right, I'm not going to be buying a new house anytime soon on 99 quids, but the work's done, it's all paid for, so it's pure profit now.
And what platform do you use for developing an online course, Gary? What would you recommend?
Well, I think the way that I've done it, in hindsight, I spent a lot of money getting something probably a bit too polished. So I had a professional video company come in and edit it and all the rest of it. And then it sits on a platform called Thinkific, which is an online learning platform. You know, I'm seeing a lot of people at the moment that are filming courses and content using a mobile phone, a light ring, and some real basic editing software. It's something you can do in your own home without needing to learn a great deal. You just got to get the structure of, you know, what value you're delivering, what message you're getting out there, and the structure and format that you're following. But, you know, this one that I've done is a couple of hours long, and it's entitled How to Earn an Extra 5K a Month, which is going to appeal to some people in the current climate. And for 99 quid with a money-back guarantee, it's a no-brainer.
I like that.
So, you know, what knowledge and experience have we got that we can package up in a different way and supply to maybe even a new audience? Simon, you've gone quiet.
I can't hear you.
Turn your volume up.
You are muted.
Yeah, a little bit. No, can't hear you. It's Bluetooth for you.
Yeah, it's fun.
Gary, do you want to wrap up if Simon's struggling? He's conscious of time.
Well, do you know what? From my point of view, I think it's a really great topic about retaining and attracting new clients. It's absolutely key. It's key for everybody, but it's certainly key in space where we might be charging higher ticket prices with our clients. And I think for me, there's been some real great insight there into some of the approaches we can take around money-back guarantees, referrals, joint partnerships, and repackaging our product offering. So for me, I think some great insight and a great, great half an hour spent again.
Yeah, I actually really needed this today. I've been feeling a little bit flat the last couple of days, and actually this has really re-energized me to sort of think of new ways, you know, particularly like the knowledge, the packaging up, experience, collaboration and stuff like that. So yeah, I'm feeling very re-energized after half an hour, and it isn't just the coffee I've just had.
Look, and I'm sure any of us would extend this, you know, The ABM is all about having that relationship that you can build with people and having somebody you can chat to. So, you know, if anybody wants to chat one-to-one about anything, you know, even if somebody's just feeling a bit down or a bit whatever, just pick the phone up, drop me an email. I'm sure everybody would say the same thing. You know, we all have down days and we all have up days. Let's just make sure that we're all supporting each other.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And also, if there are specific things that you want to talk about on the call, do email ahead of time as well. So Simon and I had a chat this morning about today's session, which is why we focus obviously on the networking, but also the value of mentoring during this time. So we had a bit of a plan, and I think it's actually probably the best call we've had to date. So do feed into us ahead of time ideas and things that you will benefit you, because obviously I think the feedback from today's session has actually been the strongest yet. So I think that pre-planning works quite well. But I'm glad it's been helpful for everyone. It's brilliant. Great to see you.
Yeah. Do you know what? I agree with you. I think it's been the best call yet. I think the if we can get this in front of the other members ASAP, but also it might be worth just, you know, I think there's plenty of tips in there that we could pull out into a blog.
That's a good call, that is, Gary. And this business of your high volume, small price ticket, I know it's something that you've talked about a lot before. I think that there's some good ideas in there, and we could bang that out across the website and for people to think about.
Yeah, that's all about your business model, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Great. Well, thanks, everyone. We'll let you go.
Completely lost Simon, haven't we?
Next week. Take care.
Bye,
thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.